Okay, guys, we're third week in, and I hope most of you managed to do the step four and step five work. Those of you who did their full step will be experiencing the promises that we will speak about today, so congratulations. Those of you who did not yet manage to take your full step, I would encourage you to do so as soon as possible if you want the freedom that you're looking for. So I'm just going to read out, as I do with every single call, the set-aside prayer. Again, if you want to join me in the prayer, you can. Dear God, please set aside anything I think I know about myself, about my disease, about the big book, about the 12 steps, the program, the fellowship, the people in the fellowship, and all spiritual terms, especially you, God, so that I may have an open mind and a new experience with all these things. Please help me to see the truth. Amen. Okay, so we're now going to read some of the promises in step five. So let's go to page 75 in the big book. So if you will turn to page 75, paragraph 2. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, and underline the word nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. Underline the word spiritual experience. The feeling that the lust problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel that we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Wow. Look at those promises. Those are the fifth step promises. And as I mentioned, if you've done the fourth step and the fifth step, then you should have realized those promises. So let's turn those into questions. Again, question one, am I delighted? So did you feel delighted when you finished doing your fifth step? Question two, do I feel I could look the world in the eye? Can I be alone at peace and ease? Have my fears started falling from me? Do I feel nearness to my Creator? Now, if you answered no to these questions, then you must have left something out. See, when I did this with my sponsor, I went through I wrote down all the things in my fourth step, and then I did a fifth step call, which meant that I read through the fourth step inventory with him, and then I went through every single thing that I did in my life that I felt I did wrong. And afterwards, he said to me, so, do you feel delighted? Do you feel like you can look the world in the eye, etc.? And I said, well, not really. And he shut the book, and he said, well, then you haven't done step four properly. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, these are the promises that the authors give us. If we've done a step four and a step five properly, then we will experience these promises. So if you're not experiencing these promises, then you must have left something out. And I'm thinking, I don't think I left anything out. So he said, okay, well, look, give it a day, think about it, and then come back to me. The next day I thought about it, and I realized, well, okay, there was one thing that I didn't mention, but I didn't feel like I really needed to mention it, and is it really going to help me to mention it? And then when I did go through it again with him, I did experience the promises, because I felt like I had literally opened up about everything, even the deepest, darkest secrets in my life. So the promises only come true if we withhold nothing. Like I said, underline the word nothing. So go back and do it again until you reveal everything. If you're not delighted, then you're still hiding something. Now, if we go to if we're on page 75, so you look halfway down the page, basically the next line on the page that we've just read, it says, returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. That's page 59. Carefully reading the first five proposals, We ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man. Underline the words, free man. And if you go to page 59 now, to the 12 steps, we're going to look at the first five steps that we've taken so far. And we're going to ask questions again. Question number one, have I admitted that I have no power over lust? Have I admitted that my life has become unmanageable? Have I come to believe that a power greater than me can restore me to sanity? Have I made a decision to turn my will and life over to the care of God as I understand him? Have I made a searching and fearless moral inventory? Have I admitted to myself, to God, and to another person the exact natures of my wrongs? Now, if we go back to page 75 and we look at the bottom of the page, on page 75, it says, is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? So here the authors are making sure that if we've done the first five steps properly and we can answer those questions, then we have built a foundation which will help us to do the rest of the steps. If you turn over to the page, page 76, it says, if we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step six. In other words, that's a big if. In other words, the authors are saying, if you have not answered those to your satisfaction, then don't go on to step six, because there's no point. If I haven't done steps 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and I feel satisfied, then there's no point moving on to step six. We have emphasized willingness, underline the words willingness, as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? In other words, if you've done step four correctly, in the fourth column, you would have listed all the things, all your character defects, selfishness, self-centeredness, right? Need to control, fears. So these are the things that have become objectionable. Can he now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us to be willing. Question, are you now ready to let God remove the obstacles blocking you from him? You see, step six is about getting ready. It's not an action step. It's about willingness. As long as you've got the willingness in step six, then we can move on to step seven. Can he now take them all? If we have taken step six and we're ready, then, if we look at the next line in the book, when ready, we say something like this. And this is, by the way, the seventh step prayer, which is part of my morning routine. My Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, underline the words all, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. At that point, you've completed step seven. So we're going to do step six and seven together. Well, step six is basically a matter of willingness. So if you are willing and you're ready, then you've done step six. And if you're ready to take step seven, then we're going to do it together. So I'm going to unmute the call. Those that are ready and willing to ask God to remove their character defects that are blocking you from him, then please say along with me the seventh step prayer. I'm just going to unmute the call, so bear with me for 1 second. Okay, so those that are ready to do the seventh step with me, then please stand if you can, and if you could say it aloud, that would be great. My Creator.
My Creator.
I am now willing, that you should have all of me.
You should have all of me.
Good and bad.
Good and bad. I pray that you now remove for me every single defect of character, which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. Congratulations. You've taken step 7. Okay. I'm going to put the call back on mute. Okay, so now that we've completed steps 6 and 7, let's move on to steps 8 and 9. If we turn back to page 59 in the big book, let's look at step 8. Step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Notice again, step 8 is a willingness step. Again, it's not an action step. It's a step to just prepare us for what we're going to do. It's pretty much like step 6. Just like in step 6, we were willing for God to remove all the character defects, and then in step 7, we actually asked him to remove them. In step 8, we become willing to make an amends to the people we have harmed. In step 9, which we're going to go into, we made a direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Now, this is crucial, very crucial. We're going to go into that in a minute. Except when to do so would injure them or others. So now, if we go to page 76, let's turn to page 76. If you look at paragraph 3, it says, now we need more action. So having taken step 7, we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Now, faith without works is dead is it's a Christian saying, but what it means is that if I don't do anything, if I just believe, if I'm only willing to do things, but I don't actually take the action, then there is no faith, there is nothing, right? We understand that as Jews at the Yom Suf, when the Jewish people were coming and they saw that they were stuck, they had the Yom Suf in front of them. They had the sea, and behind them they had the Egyptians running after them, and they started to daven. They started to say, God, help. And God said, what are you davening for? Right? Faith without works is dead. We needed someone to go in there up to his nostrils for the sea to split. We needed to take action. And therefore, this is where we start to take action. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed. By the way, notice in the book, it says, we have a list of all persons we have harmed. Hold on a second. Where? I don't have a list. Where would I have a list of the people I've harmed? The answer is you have them in step 4. In other words, the people, the very people that you wrote down, who you felt resentful towards in step 4, are the people who you have harmed. Isn't it incredible? It's amazing how many people would have changed their step 4 list had they known that they would have to make an amends with them, right? So again, we have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. It's amazing how many people I heard when they took their fourth step and they wrote their fourth step inventory that they burned it afterwards. It's like, I did my fourth step and now I'm going to burn the sheet. Well, no. The big book says very clearly here that we need that sheet. We need that sheet in order to do our step 9. Okay, so now, hopefully you didn't burn your fourth step inventory like some people. If we look at the next line, we subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, step 8 is about building up the willingness to do this, because it's not easy. I can tell you from my own experience, and I'll share with you in a moment my personal experience in Step 9, and some of the stories are absolutely incredible, I can tell you it's not easy. And so when you're doing a Step 8, it's important to really ask Hashem, if you haven't the will to do it, if you're somebody that you really have a problem with, somebody who's really, really done something to you that's made you feel really angry towards them, then the authors are telling us what we need to do is we need to pray. We need to ask Hashem or God to be able to give us the willingness to make an amends with them. And this is a very important line. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any length for victory over lust. And I want you to underline the words any length, because this is not about doing it half-heartedly or doing a little bit of it. We need to make an amends with everyone that we have harmed. So on page 77, if you look at the third line, it says here, and this is incredible, ever wondered what your real purpose in life was? That's been my question for the last 31 years. On page 77, line 3, the author's telling me what my purpose is. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. So here the authors are telling me what my real purpose in life is. Notice that my purpose, it's not my purpose in SA. This is not about SA. It's not about Sexaholics Anonymous. This is not about getting rid of lust. This is about my purpose in life. Now, if we look at 7 lines down the page, it says here, it's almost halfway down the page, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. Now, do you desire to right your wrongs with others? And if you look halfway down the page, it says, the question of how to approach the man we hated will arise, right? How many times have I heard people say, yeah, but this guy, I mean, there's no way, I mean, he's on my list, but there's no way I'm going to be able to make an amends with him. There's absolutely no chance. Do you know how much I hate this guy? Do you have any idea what he's done to me? And here the authors are recognizing that. The question of how to approach the man we hate will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him. And though we may have acquired a better attitude towards him, we're still not keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful, underline the word helpful, and forgiving, underline the word forgiving, spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. Now, I'm going to share with you shortly my experience with Step 9. But firstly, it says here, in fact, no, I'm going to share it with you now. So when it came to Step 9, I had a few people on my list. One of them was my next door neighbor, well, not next door, but downstairs neighbor. I used to live in an apartment block. And just to give you a little bit of an idea here, okay, this woman was an absolute witch. I mean, she was, and I have to be careful what I say here, because maybe she's listening to this call. No, I'm kidding. Chances of that is very unlikely. But she was one of those sort of, she was Jewish. She wasn't religious. And the minute that me and my family moved into the apartment block, I felt her resentment. I just felt her uncomfortability with us. We had a problem because we needed to have a Shabbos lock on the door so we can get in and out for Shabbos, and she didn't want any of it. Every single opportunity that she had to tell the landlord something about us that we've done wrong, whether it was, oh, I found a crumb in the elevator, oh, you know, the dustbin that they put out wasn't put exactly inside the dustbin exactly as it should have been. And they parked their car a little bit to the left. I mean, it was absolutely crazy. She drove us mad. For 2 years, I hated this woman. I wanted her, I wanted her away and out of my life. And I had absolutely no intentions of ever apologizing to her. I had no reason to. She'd been an absolute thorn in my side. So I'm driving, it was Friday afternoon, I'm driving in my car, and I'm thinking about how I'm doing step 9, and I've done a few amends to a few people, you know, feeling good. And it occurs to me that she's still on my list, and I thought to myself, I can't do it. I just can't bring myself to apologize to this woman. And then I don't know what it was, but I stopped my car and I thought to myself, okay, the big book says that when I don't want to make an amends, I pray to God for the willingness. And I sat in my car for a few minutes. I closed my eyes. I wasn't driving, by the way. And I said, God, please give me the courage. Give me the willingness to make an amends to this person, because I want to be free. I want to do step 9. I want to make an amends with everybody on my list. And suddenly, I can't exactly explain why, but I suddenly felt a little bit more comfortable with the idea. And so I drove past the bakery. I don't know why I did this. I drove past the bakery, Erev Shabbos, and I went into the bakery and I bought a challah. And I went to my apartment block, and I walked in and I knocked on her door, and I'm shaking. Literally, my body is shaking. And I can hear her slowly muttering towards the door. She's a bit older. And she's like, who's that bothering me now? Who is that? She opens the door. She sees me. She goes, oh, it's you. What do you want? And I'm thinking in my head, oh, God, please tell me this more harder than it is already. I held out the challah, and I looked at her and I said, I bought this for you, and I just want to say I'm sorry. And I apologize for all the things that I've done wrong. She looked at me, and she had tears in her eyes, and she reached over to give me a hug. And I didn't really have much choice in the matter, but I kind of like lay there limp, and I'm like, well, I can't, my wife, I'm married, I'm religious, I can't really hug. And she's like, come in, sit down. I sat down at her on a couch. I'd never been in her place for 2 years. I'd hardly even looked in her eyes in the last 2 years. Never said hello or good morning at all to her in the last 2 years. Here I was sitting in her living room on her couch. And I just sat there and I said to her, I just want you to know, Susan, I'm sorry for being a stubborn, egotistical, self-centered person. And I apologize for everything that I've caused any harm to you. I really hope you can forgive me. And I want you to know that if there's ever any problems with anything, I want to give you my mobile number. I'm thinking to myself at this point, am I nuts giving her my mobile number? But this is it. I'm doing it. Literally, I was just in the element. And I wrote down my mobile number and I said, if you have any problems at all, please give me a call. She just literally sat there frozen in complete and utter shock. Her mouth was like dropped. And she said to me, I don't know what's happened to you, but I want you to know that you're a mensch for doing this. And I don't know what it is, but thank you so much. You've made my day. And I could tell you, like, I could tell you the after story. From that day forward, every single morning that I saw this woman, she smiled and said good morning, and I said good morning, and I never ever had a problem with her ever again. I was in that block for another year afterwards, and that year, it was like I saw a different person. First of all, she was a miserable, miserable old fish, okay? And people came up to me in the building, said, what did you do to Susan? She's completely changed. she's walking around smiling, she's happy. And I'm telling you, it was an incredible, incredible experience. I can't explain how amazing I felt. I felt like I went upstairs after I did this, and I went up to my wife and I told her what happened. And she's like, wow, I can't believe that. I'm like, I want to call up every single person in the world that I know and just say, sorry, this is amazing. This stuff is like a drug. It's incredible. I actually later found out that Susan had cancer, and she actually overcame cancer. I found out that she lived on her own with her older mother, who she basically took care of. Susan was never married, and she was a special lady, and unfortunately she had a lot of baggage. But I just wanted to share that story with you, because it's, for me, it speaks volumes of how amazing these steps are, and it's incredible how I changed as a person. I realized that it didn't help me. Forget about Susan for a minute. It didn't help me to have all those resentments towards this person. It doesn't matter who was wrong and who was right. I had a better life from that day on, because I was able to stand up, have the courage, and say, I'm wrong, and I'm sorry. And so this stuff really, really works. Okay, back into the big book. We're in page 77. Right at the bottom, the last paragraph. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. This is so important, right? It's so tempting. It's so tempting when you're making an amends with someone to say, I'm really sorry for doing this and this and this, but, right, a big word, but you could have done this or you should have done. No, that's not a step 9. I'm not there to take their inventory. I'm not there to clean their side of the street. I'm there to clean my side of the street. Simply, we tell him that we will never get over lusting. Again, this, by the way, this part of the book, it's not necessary to do this. Sometimes it says simply we tell him that we will never get over lusting until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. The reason why it's saying this here is because most alcoholics, it's obvious, right? People see them walking in the streets, throwing up and looking the way they look. Whereas as a lustaholic, people don't exactly, unless you're obviously looking at porn, you know, in public. I mean, but that's a whole different story. Let's keep going in the book. We are there to sweep us off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. Now, again, I'm not there to talk about them. And if you think that making an amends means that you can also talk about the other person, what they did wrong, then you're not taking step 9. If you're expecting the person also to pat you on the back and give you this big praise, you know, for saying sorry, you also may be in for a surprise. You see, in my particular case, in one of those cases, the ones I just mentioned with my neighbor Susan, I got a great reaction, right? But it's not always the case. Sometimes you may call up somebody and they may not give you the best of reactions. You know, I once made an amends with somebody and I said to them, you know, I'm really sorry. I hope our relationship can be the way it was, you know, before. And he just sort of kind of looked at me and, you know, kind of said, well, yeah, you know, maybe within time. And I'm like, okay, it wasn't terrible, but at the same time, I was kind of expecting more. Don't expect anything out of an amends. Believe it or not, expectations lead to resentments. So, page 79. Let's turn to page 79. It says, if you look seven lines down from the top, reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths, again, underline the words, any lengths, to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything. Now, step 9 is hard. This is probably one of the hardest steps of all the 12 steps, at least for some. For some, this is the hardest step. And we need to remember why we're doing this. We need to remember what we are doing, because it's not easy to face our past, and it's not easy to pick up the courage, and it's not easy to get the humility needed to say sorry to somebody that we feel has wronged us. It's not easy to say sorry, but we must, because we must be willing to go to any length. And if you look at the next line in the big book, usually, however, other people are involved. I want you to underline the word other people. Therefore, we are not to be the hasty and foolish martyr who would needlessly sacrifice others to save himself from the sexaholic pit. So this is extremely important, because, you see, a lot of people, they take this a little bit too, they do this without any advice, and it can be very dangerous. You see, I'm going to talk about one example, okay? It says in the previous paragraph that we may lose our position or reputation, and we may face jail, but we are willing. Notice it says we are willing. You have to be willing to go to jail. Doesn't mean you should, and it doesn't mean that if you've done something that will end you up in jail, doesn't mean that you should go and actually, you know, cause yourself to go to jail. Why? Because there are other people involved. If you're the big, you know, guy, you know, you want to get up and make an amends and say, do you know what, I'm willing to go to jail for this. I want freedom. I'm going to go into the local police station and say, did you know that I did such and such? And then put out my hands for them to put the handcuffs on. I'm sorry, but if you're married and you've got a wife at home and you've got children who are going to suffer from this action, you have no right to do that. Why should you put them in a situation of loss for your own freedom? That's selfish. So therefore, although I have to be willing to do that, I have to be careful of how it's going to affect other people. This is a very, very sensitive topic, and this is why we do this with our sponsors. Before we make an amends, we go through it with our sponsors to make sure it's the right thing to do. We have no right to harm others in order to get better. And you should know there are many creative ways to make an amends without directly involving others. We're going to see later on there's various ways we can do this. Now, if we turn to page 80, so that's page 80, top of the page. Before taking drastic action, which might implicate other people, we secure their consent. If we have obtained permission, have consulted with others, asked God to help, and the drastic step is indicated, we must not shrink. So question, will making this amends affect my family? Will paying someone I owe money to affect my ability to pay the rent? In other words, you may have somebody who you owe a lot of money, a substantial amount of money to, and he might be on your step 9 list. And it may not be enough. You know, making amends, by the way, isn't about saying sorry. Making an amends means we right our wrongs. So, you know, if you owe somebody $20,000, it's not enough to go, oh, by the way, sorry, Frank, I owe you $20,000. I'm really sorry. That's not going to do it. You know, you owe $20,000. You got to pay $20,000. But the question you have to ask yourself is, are you going to affect your family? Sometimes it's a good idea to ask your wife whether, you know, it's a good idea whether you can pay this amount of money or not. Do you have the rent to pay? Will you be late on your mortgage if you have to pay this debt? Now, if your crime has been done, you have no right to implicate others. That's very important. Now, again, on page 81, we're on page 80 still, three quarters of the way down. Page 80, three quarters of the way down. He saw that he had to place the outcome in God's hands, or he would soon start lusting again. In other words, again, we don't have control over the outcomes here. I may go and make an amends with someone, and it may turn out completely not the way I thought it was going to turn out. The person may chuck me out of the shop. The person may kick me out of their house. They may slam the phone down on me and say, don't ever call me again. That's not my business. I've done my part. It's in God's hands. It's all about what I do. It's the actions that I need to take. This is basically step three, right? Step three, remember, we are not in control of the outcome. We are only responsible of taking the actions necessary. In step three, remember, we turned our will and our life over to the care of God. And therefore, I'm not in control anymore. I'm just taking the actions I need to take. If we turn to page 83 in paragraph 2, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. In other words, we're not doing the steps. We have to live the steps. This program is a design for living. And if you see later on, next week we're going to talk about step 10. Step 10 is a daily living of the steps. Or steps 10, 11, and 12 are the daily living of the steps. So if we look at halfway down the page on page 83, it says, there may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. So sometimes it's impossible to make an amends in person to someone, right? Sometimes it might be a matter of writing them a letter or picking up the phone. And in fact, sometimes it may be impossible to do anything because sometimes that person that you've hurt may no longer be alive. I'm going to share with you something that's it's quite dear to me. And I get emotional thinking about it. But I want to share it. So I had a cousin who was about 28 years old when he died. He took his own life. He was a sexaholic. He was involved in molesting a child or someone underage. And he had a court case, and basically he didn't want to go through with the court case. He was also publicly humiliated in the press. His name and his face was public knowledge. And he was found dead in his room. He had slit his throat and took his life. Whenever someone asks me whether this disease is really a life or death disease, I say to them 100% it is. And I know that firsthand. The reason I'm sharing this is because I wasn't very nice to this cousin of mine. When we grew up, he was about 2 years younger than me. And I used to bully him a lot. I used to pick on him. He was an easy target. And I really felt bad. And when I came to the Levaya, I felt so bad because I felt like I needed to make an amends to this cousin of mine. And I didn't know how. And I went to the Shiva, and my uncle was sitting there, and I was sitting there. And, you know, he was talking about his son, and he was such a tortured soul, and he must have suffered so much. And little did he know how much I related to that. I can only imagine what he must have gone through. I went through the similar feelings that my cousin went through, the feelings that nobody understands, the feelings that I have no control. The feelings that I want to stop and I can't. And then my uncle said something. He said, I'm struggling to pay for for the burial, because I want to bury him in Eretz Yisrael. And at the time, my cousin was in Australia, and he wanted to bury him in Eretz Yisrael, and he couldn't afford a proper he needed some help. And suddenly in my mind, I thought to myself, maybe this is my way of making amends to him. So I went up to him quietly, and I said to my uncle, I said, how much do you need? And he said, oh, I need quite a few thousand pounds, quite a considerable amount of money. I think it was 20,000 pounds. He said, thank God there have been some generous donations that I've got. I'm still short, you know. And I asked him how much. And it was a decent amount of money. And I didn't hesitate, because I knew I needed to make this amends. So I ran to the bank, and I took out the money, and I walked up to my uncle, and I gave it to him. I put it in his hand, and I walked away. And my uncle sort of felt the money in his hand. He looked at it, and he looked back up at me, and he said, are you sure you can give me this? And I said, absolutely. And I went home. I told my wife, and she was really happy. She said, you made the right decision. And, I hope that by doing that, I've made some amends to my cousin. But this is what I have to do. I mean, this is the length that I need to go to be free. And I actually want to make this, I want to dedicate this call to him. May his neshama have an aliyah. So back into the book, we're almost to the end of the call. Page 83, the bottom of the page. This is actually one of the most hopeful pages. These are the ninth step promises, and I read these every single day, every morning that I wake up, and every evening before I go to sleep, I read these promises, because it reminds me of what I am allowed to have, what I'm able to have if I keep doing this program. If I keep working this program, these ninth step promises will be in my life on a daily basis. So I'm going to read them to you. Again, it's page 83 at the bottom. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. By the way, new means I've never had it before, meaning that even if I have had some freedom in the past, here I'm going to have a new freedom that I've never experienced and a new happiness that I've never experienced. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. This is very hard for a lot of people who haven't tasted freedom and sobriety. How can I not regret the past? Of all the things that I've done, how can I not regret it? I can tell you from my experience, I do not regret it at all. I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be living the way I'm living if it wasn't for the things that I did in the past. And I'm truly grateful for that. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. So if I want to experience these promises that I just read, I have to be willing to take the action. Step 9 is hard. There's no question about it. It takes humility, and it takes courage. All you need to do is ask yourself this question. How free do I want to be? So every time I think about, can I make an amends to this person? I ask myself that question. How free do I want to be? So how do you make an amends? Right? Number one is you need to get consent if necessary. In other words, if there's somebody that's going to be affected in some way by your making that amends, you need to get consent from that person, whether it's your wife, whether it's a business partner. Number two is it's better to do it in person, but if not, then you should do it on the phone, and if not, then write a letter. First, name the thing. Now, when you actually are in front of the person, the first thing you should do is name the thing that you did wrong. Be specific. It's amazing how many times you hear someone going, oh, I did a step nine. Yeah, what did you do? Oh, well, I went and I just said sorry. Sorry for that. That's not enough. You've got to be specific, exactly the things that you did wrong. And say the words, I was wrong. How incredibly amazing how many times, even now, when I make an amends with someone, it's so hard to say I was wrong. I could say sorry. I could say, oh, you know, feel bad. But to say the words, I was wrong, is the hardest. Those are the three hardest words in the world. You know why? Because all my life, I always thought I was right. I've always been right. It's always about me, 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 me. But to say I was wrong means, oh, I'm not right. I'm not in control. It's not about me. Just saying I'm sorry is not enough. An apology is not an amends. I must attempt to right the wrong. I have to fix the problem. So ask the person at the end, is there anything I can do to make this right? And don't make excuses. For example, don't say, I'm sorry, but I was in a bad mood at the time, or, oh, you know, I was going through a hard time, and da-da-da, and, you know, there was this situation and this situation. Don't make excuses. Just come out with it. I was wrong. What can I do to make it right? And the last point is, don't point out any of the other person's errors. Remember, I only need to clean my side of the street, not his or hers. I don't like making amends, but I have to in order to be free. I try not to harm people nowadays because I don't want to make an amends. So it's amazing how much I try to like not step on anyone's toes these days, right? Because I know in my mind, if I'm going to annoy someone, I'm going to have to make an amends, right? I'm doing step 10 every day on a daily basis. So if I'm about to yell at my wife or, you know, say something that I'm going to have to make an amends later, I think twice because I'm going to have to make that amends. Remember, if you leave out anyone, you will not be able to be free. Step 9 moves into step 10. So just get started and don't worry about finishing. You're going to do steps 8 and 9. Before the next call, next Tuesday. Again, I would suggest that when you take your step 4 list of people, I would sit down and think about anyone who you've left off the list. Maybe there are people who you've harmed, but they have not done you any harm. So they won't be on your step 4 list, but you need to add them, obviously, onto the step 9 list. When you've got your full list of your step 9, you need to call up your sponsor and just run it by him in terms of what you're going to do. Because as I said, it's very, very important not to run into a step 9 and doing an amends, which could affect other people. So next week, we're going to be going through steps 10, 11, and 12, which will be the final session in the workshop. I might do a follow-up call just to see how everyone's getting along. I think that might be a good idea. I'd like other people's feedback. At this point, I've come to the end of the call. I'm going to take questions and answers now.